pressure on her. When I'm touching you, girl, I said you show me just what I'm worth.
Welcome to another African Rhythms. I'm David Jones. Got an action soul-packed show with special guest Mike Ingram. Oh, it looks like we don't have you on, Mike. How about that?
Am I on?
Yeah, you're there. Yeah, good to have you back, Mike. And I know we're going to have another wonderful show.
Good to be back.
And focus some more on beautiful soul music. And we're going to talk a little bit about the message, music, and soul, and some other things a little bit later on. I mean, Heaven Right Here on Earth, great songwriting. A couple of great Natural 4 records where he wrote and arranged some of the tunes.
Yeah.
And
Leroy Hudson.
I personally don't think that they're that bad. I'm reading about Leroy in the Chicago Soul, the Richard Pruta, the great book written about Chicago scene. He said that he thought Leroy suffered from, he was a great arranger and singer and musician, but he suffered from a lack of bad tunes, perhaps not collaborating with the right people. But I would say, in my own opinion, having listened to a fair amount of Leroy, I'd say that he does have some great tunes, and he had all the potential of people like Curtis and Stevie and many of the finest soul musicians. But somehow, like you say, I mean, he didn't get the breaks. Somehow people didn't believe him or think his music was that worthwhile. I mean, he produced a couple.
Well, you know, sometimes, David, it turns out where a person's ego can be their best friend and worst enemy. And, you know, for somebody who has talent, I mean, obvious talent like a Leroy Hudson, you can cut your own throat by not either being open to suggestions about where you want to take your music, or just cutting everybody off and really being locked in on what you have and what you believe is your sound. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was probably that and those offshoots from that that led to the conflict between he and Curtis Mayfield.
Feel. Don't it make you feel good? To know that everything's alright. Girl, you mean the world to me. And darling, baby, can't you see? First time I saw you, you were walking down the street. Next thing I knew, girl, you had swept me off my feet. Said it was a
in the last few weeks, we've had a chance to cover some ground that maybe a lot of the soul folks haven't really touched on, and that is the message-oriented music. A lot of times folks enjoy the music, and it's appreciated that they do, but those messages, those things that are so simplistic but so necessary for humans to get along kind of get lost in the sauce, and I think it's good that we're going to focus on that a little bit now tonight.
Definitely. Certainly soul music, as great as all the singing is and the phrasing and all those things and the spiritual side of it, also, over the years, such giants as Curtis Mayfield and Marvin Gaye have brought some quite beautiful message that hopefully has enabled us all, has been food for thought.
Very much so. Because of people like Marvin and Curtis taking stands like that and making it something that was addressable to the masses by going that musical route, it made things palatable for people because they had to listen. They were enjoying the music, and when they sat down and played it that second or third time and stuff started to sink in, it seemed like, okay, here we're making some progress here. But for every artist that was like that, there were many others that didn't either have the guts or the financial wherewithal to put themselves out there in a position where they could get that kind of feedback and also put their message out in the same manner.
Let's now focus on Chicago soul. Now, here's an area that we've wanted to focus on a little bit more and just maybe tell the people about a little bit, because it's such a strong, rich area of soul music.
Exactly. This is like the big city of Southern soul music, because just as it was with people coming up from the South looking for work, Chicago was the biggest or the closest big city. And there were other cities that were of reasonable size, but they weren't offering the type of work and the opportunity for a livelihood that Chicago was. Mm. So, of course, the music came with them from everywhere, from all those parts of the South. And Chicago was like crossroads, because you also had people in the Midwest, like in Ohio, and further up. And Chicago was like the meeting point for all of these places. It was a huge hub, and a lot of folks and a lot of musical ideas transferred through there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the best songwriters and arrangers were attracted to the place. You had people such as Curtis Mayfield, who was such a giant in production, in arranging, in songwriting, and he would attract other talents because they were really in awe of his talents.
Yes, indeed. The Chicago Roll Call has some serious soul power on it. We've got Curtis, we've got Gene Chandler, we've got Jackie Wilson, the Five Stair Steps, the Dells. I mean, there's a mountain of folks who can make a serious soul lineup.
Jackie was the biggest for a long time. Jackie Wilson was like the number one artist. Certainly other artists, this helped develop the scene, no question. I mean, Jackie had his early good years, and then later by about 66, and we're going to focus on that Higher and Higher album, but there is an example of sort of Jackie's second wave of popularity, and that was the Impressions around 66, and other things were happening.
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, had Jackie Wilson not been locked into the situation he had been at Brunswick Records, we would have heard of Jackie Wilson a lot sooner, and he would have hit a Michael Jackson, if you will, type of status back then as a pop performer, because Berry Gordy had laid out a success path for him, had written some of his hits like Reek Petit and all that, and had he been able to free him from his contract and sign him up with Motown, we would have heard about Jackie in the very same way that we hear about a Stevie Wonder or a Smokey Robinson, as far as like
popularity. Certainly everybody was in awe of him. I mean, Elvis, I mean, James Brown, they all, I mean, this guy could dance like James, I mean, he could sing like nobody, you know. He had the who's who of songwriters coming in and arrangers, Johnny Pates and some of the greats. Yeah, why don't we give them a little taste? Let's start with the Windy City theme by Windy City, an appropriate way to start, and then let's go right into some Jackie.
Let's set it off.
Beyond a feeling, goes beyond a thrill. Not just a city created from concrete, glass, and steel. Cold-blooded and outrageous, very often underestimated. Cause it's wicked and it's wild, and makes a man of any child. For the hawk can eat the apple and fly high over the cities near the sea. Life in Chi-Town, baby, is as real as life can be. Why, the city by the lake has everything that it takes to teach wisdom to the wise and make the weak want to survive. the hawk stole the funk from the Mayu town. While Chocolate City is another treat that the hawk has swallowed down. Hey, mama, tell your children, and daddy, tell your sweets, if there ever was a mother, this is one you have to meet. There's a group in this town that exemplifies how we get down. They call themselves... Dig up.
I'm sick and tired of those heartaches. Everywhere I go, anything I do, leave memories of no one but you. You went away and left me that day. Now I'm all alone with no one to call on but those heartaches. I tried so hard to be the one for you, but you didn't care, you just weren't true. So now you're gone, my darling, and I'm alone and blue. There's nothing left but those heartaches from you. This hurt feeling I can't help but show. Stay with him and soon you will know about those heartaches.
Thank you.
Listening to African Rhythms on CITR, and that's the Iceman himself, Jerry Butler, and Brenda Lee Eager. A very interesting duet, and apparently a hit, Mike.
Very much so a hit. This was probably Jerry Butler's best effort. I mean, he did some beautiful ballads like He Don't Love You and For Your Precious Love, but this duet that he did with Brenda Lee Eager stands out as probably his best work ever. And Brenda Lee Eager, the young lady who sang with him, ended up winning an audition where she sang against four or five other young ladies. She ended up winning the spot because they wanted something very similar to a Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell type hookup. Jerry Butler was always a lone wolf, never even thought about having anybody do duets with him and whatnot. And this was something that he was goaded into and coaxed into at the suggestion of Gene Chandler. And so, in picking up Brenda Lee.
Because it was a successful thing.
Because it was a successful thing, and they wanted to go with a successful trend. Chemistry between them, if you will, really hit. And this was the very best that they could have ever have done. They followed up with Let It Be Me as their second single. But it didn't quite reach the success of Ain't Understanding Mellow, but the two of them really did work well and sound well, sound great together.
Yeah, it's from a great album, Sagittarius Movement, which has Donny Hathaway arranging on it, actually. And of course, early on, Jerry Butler was hooked up with Curtis Mayfield, and they were the original Impressions.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, and For Your Precious Love being their big tune from the late 50s. And that was, I guess, the seed, the birth of a lot of... I mean, that was the same time that Jackie Wilson came out, and so the Iceman and Curtis go back quite a ways.
The Iceman, Curtis, and Gene Chandler, they all go back a ways because they were doing a lot of shows together, and Gene, at that time, we were speaking about Rainbow and what a powerful little operetta, if you will.
Yeah, we're going to have to play that one in future shows.
Oh, for sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah, there was a nice little competition going on between the three of them.
Yeah, and OK apparently was the label that they were on. And then they switched it all over. A little bit later on came Curtum Records.
Right, because OK at that time was a race label. You know, they were labels that they had isolated specifically for black acts. And OK was one of those labels. It just cut out records specifically for the black market. They knew where to send these things. They knew where to distribute them and whatnot. And they were played on the black stations. Very rarely did a song on a label like OK ever cross over into the public market.
Yeah, a common problem, certainly, with this great music is the fact that it, you know, often has not been heard, and some of the finest music, just simply because it wasn't a hit, it didn't get any FM radio play, the jocks, perhaps some of them weren't hip enough or interested enough in the music.
Well, you know, you got to understand something else, too, David. I mean, we're talking about a kind of left-handed discrimination, if you will, because, I mean, we have formats now like easy listening and whatnot, and I can't think of anything easier to listen to than this beautiful stuff, but because a lot of the artists are black, you do not see them getting played, and of course, when you don't get played, you don't get royalties, and when you don't get royalties, you don't get extra coin from the record labels to go on ahead and further your creative ideas and stuff, so.
Certainly, yeah, a hidden agenda at times seems to have been the order of the day,
sometimes.
And all that we can do here is represent this music, because in some ways today, some of this still goes on to some degree.
Indeed.
You know, it has to be said. Now let's go right back into Chicago Sounds, and another great voice who actually sounds pretty similar to Jerry Butler in some ways, Garland Green.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
You see, they used to call me the heartbreaker. Some even call me a troublemaker. I was the baddest thing in the town till I met you, girl. You tore my empire down. You played on the player. I used to walk around every day real sharp, till you started messing with my heart. You had it figured out all the time, on to the last detail, how you had messed up my mind. You played on the player.
Some nice Chicago sounds. As the 70s progressed, the impressions, I guess Curtis, Leroy Hutson took over the duties on Curtim, and that was produced by Curtis, and they made a couple of albums. Not too much success, I might add.
No, but when you have a personal change like that, where you've got someone who puts as much of a stamp on a group like Curtis Mayfield does, that's to be expected.
Yeah, difficult. And I read that Leroy felt constricted in that environment creatively, not even being the lead singer. And so he went solo on Curtim and made those fine Hudson 1, 2 albums, Closer to the Source, all that early 70s stuff, which is of great quality. And these impressions went through a second renaissance with when they got in Ed Townsend and Rich Tufaux.
Yeah.
You know, this morning when the phone rang, I knew something was wrong. You know that funny feeling you get sometimes. Sure enough, it was your girlfriend on the phone, and she told me that. She said you had a fight when you got home last night. You know, it hurt me so doggone bad, because I love you so much. I love you so much. But you and I both knew that.
It had to happen, girl. Oh, oh, oh. Sooner or later, it had to happen, girl.
If you do wrong, you know someday.
Yeah.
Listening to CITR 101.9 FM UBC Radio. We're right up here in the University of British Columbia, CITR.ca. You can listen in and podcast right there. We're listening to a remixed version of a 1997 show, African Rhythms, going way back. And this is yet another great show done with Mike Ingram, who lives back now in New York City.
Yes.
In fact, we're going to listen to the entire three-hour show because African Rhythms back in the 90s was three-hour shows. So we're going right through till 10 p.m. tonight.
Simple words, they seem so clear to me. Forgive our country, Mississippi State. Forgive your man, with some love for me. Spend through our history, it's true. We don't seem to know what to do. Back in the world.
Wonderful, Curtis Mayfield, Back to the World. And that's what he was doing around 1974 on Curtis Records. And what can you say, really, about Curtis Mayfield?
I mean, that's a heck of a way to end a little Chicago set here, I tell you. Curtis was an institution. I mean, everything in Chicago, musically, he had his hands on. And if the phrase benevolent dictator fits anybody, would fit Curtis, because Curtis was very much into sharing his musical ideas. He was very much somebody who was supportive and as far as pushing young talent and everything. So the eventual cross swords that became what happened with him and Leroy Hudson was a little sad, because it wasn't, I don't think, something that was intentional. It wasn't a vindictive type of artistic clash, as it was just so much. You know, sometimes some folks just get lost in the cracks, and it seemed like Leroy was one of those people.
In contrast to Curtis Mayfield, who was, in some ways, everybody's friend, had no problem, like you say, with influencing, inspiring young talents. I mean, if you just think of the magnitude of just what the impressions and the influence, I mean, Bob Marley personally took some of his music and inspired and interpreted it, as well as the Rocksteady, a lot of reggae music from that time, many other soul groups. And as the impressions went into the 70s, Curtis went solo, and in the beginning, he didn't go solo to stay solo. He was going to carry on with the impressions. Him going solo had a big impact. Around that time with the impressions, Check Out Your Mind and that stuff, he started to get funkier. He ended up making some of the most influential funky early 70s records, Superfly included.
Very much so. The Superfly soundtrack, I'm glad you mentioned that, had to be one of the best tracks of that era, because Shaft had gotten the Oscar for best score as a movie, and so Isaac Hayes and the Stax people were in seventh heaven. This was like their zenith, and everything just plummeted from there. But when Curtis Mayfield decided to do soundtrack for a movie, he didn't look at it as, well, I'm going to just go ahead and follow a set script. He had some definite set ideas about things, and the songs that followed from there, not just Superfly, the theme song, but Pusher Man and all those were hits in their own right, and it was amazing how many hits came off that soundtrack album.
Thank you. the smile. Broken home, father gone, mama tired, so is all alone. Child, thinking he's been hanged. In the back of his mind, he said, didn't have to be here. You didn't have to love for me. While I was just a nothing child, why couldn't they just let me be? Let me be, let me be, let me be. Control, I'm told, from across the track. Where is the mayor who make all things fair? He lives outside a polluted air. And I didn't have to be here. Just a nothing child. Why couldn't they just let me be? Let me be, let me be, let me be. I'm sorry, son, all your mind is gone. Painful rip in my upper hip. I guess it's time to take another trip. Don't care now what nobody say. Take the pain away. It's getting worse day by day. And all my life has been this way. Can't reason with the Christian man. Finances, all that he understand. You junkie mama crats, you know. Would rip her, but I love her so. Love her so.
Was an in-depth record, and I believe Curtis looked into the film and read the script, and he was influenced by it and gave his own beautiful vision. And being a great poet of speaking of the ghetto anyway, I mean, he was the perfect guy to represent and pretty well put down the milestone for that period. You know, in years to come, I'm sure it'll be looked back at as being some of the most significant music of the period.
Yeah, he was the perfect man for the project, and I can remember for years, no one would dare release Superfly on TV, you know, because Shaft had been on TV like, mm-hmm. like 5-6 years after the fact, but no one wanted to touch Superfly because the message in it was so strong.
Yeah, it was.
They didn't want to dilute it, and they wouldn't release it on TV as a edited version and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, even today, some of the images in the movie are pretty heavy. You know, what it's talking about, the seedy side of life, the drugs and the problems that it can bring, even though he escapes in the end. I mean, the general message and the vision of the movie is a stark one. There's no question.
Yeah, very dark. You can't get around what was going on there, and they didn't offer any kind of sugar sweet way out or some sort of beautiful solution to have everybody leave the theater smiley and all that stuff. It was hardcore. It was down to earth.
Yeah, it was an interesting period. And, you know, somebody that we've wanted to talk to, let's turn our attention now to Linda Jones. Now, this is somebody I know you're familiar with because she was from the New York area.
She was from the New York area. Yeah. She was born in Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah, recorded for the Turbo Records,
which was part of Sylvia Robinson's empire along with Stan.
Yeah, but first, Loma. Now, what happened there? I guess she had the hit with Hypnotize.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Sylvia just snatched her up because, I mean, Loma was one of those, like, in your house, in the basement kind of labels and stuff. And when it was released, Enoch Hawthorne Gregory, who was a DJ at WWRL in New York City, which was New York's local soul station at the time, one of three, but he heard Hypnotized, and back then, you know, there was a lot of payola and stuff going on the ground and stuff, so you slip somebody some coin, they'll play a record. He took this record after hearing it and just said, don't give me a dime, and he put it on, and right after he put it on, the station switchboards were lit up, and everybody was just touched by the passion and the power of what Linda was conveying in the song, and it became a real hit for her.
Yeah, I mean, such is the power, versatility and range of Linda Jones singing that even opera singers, I've been told, turn their heads. And here she is, Linda Jones.
happened to you today. Now while you're alone, which is not that often, I want you to take a minute and listen to what I have to say. Remember the quarrel we had and I told you to get out and find someone else, which you did. And when I saw you both together, I would smile and give you a convincing hello. And remember once you told me that I had no feelings at all? Well, please, baby, please listen to what I have to say.
So you think
ladies and gentlemen, is Linda Jones from Turbo and Loma Records. And is it any wonder, Mike, that that is some of the great soul lovers around the world's favorite singer?
You ain't kidding, man. But they talk about stars that burn brightly, and you know, when they normally do, they end up leaving us way too soon, and Linda Jones was definitely one of those stars. She'd been singing since the age of six, and as you could tell from those little gospel tinges there, and girlfriend knew how to go to church, and she knew how to do it in a standard ballad form, and unfortunately, her life sounded some of the passions and emotions that she delivered in those songs.
Yeah, you can hear the tragedy in her voice from what she was going through, and apparently she had diabetes.
Fortunately, she left us too soon. She died in 1972, I believe.
Yeah, in her late 20s or mid to late 20s, so she was very young, a great singer. And now, Mike, Let us go back to that wonderful world of Philly.
Ah, yes. The Beggin' Brothers. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. From this band, I mean, I know you remember this song from your wonderful times you spent in New York, in New York City, and which was close to Philly.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And have relatives there.
Yeah. This band, The Futures, were on Philly International a little bit later, but this was on Gamble, which I imagine is just slightly before Philly was formed?
Slightly before. Kenny Gamble was trying to put together his own thing, didn't have enough funds to go his own route on a solo tip, but you know, eventually he became part of the Philly International mob and stuff, so it worked out for him. But The Futures were one of the groups that he was trying to get on the map because he was childhood friends with the King brothers, James and John, who were members of the group. And this song we're about to hear, Love Is Here, was penned by Gamble, and it was one of their, it was actually their only major hit outside of Philadelphia and stuff, but it was a beautiful ballad nonetheless.
Yeah, what a beautiful sweet soul ballad this is, and we're going to start with that and get into a little Philadelphia selection.
Oh, no. baby. I was standing in the bus station. I got about 10 minutes for my bus pull out. So I figured I'd call you and let you know I'd be home in about 8 to 10 hours. Yeah, I missed you. Can't wait till I see you. But I'm gonna tell you something. Yeah. Oh, Regina, I'm coming home now. Said it hurts, but it won't be long now. Oh, Regina, your man will be home soon. Girl, you know I miss you. Hey, girl.
Treasure.
And that's the OJs here on African Rhythms. My name's David Jones, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM on your dial. And we're going to be here right up until 9 o'clock. My special guest, Mike Ingram, and that's our short but sweet little Philly segment of the show.
Can't get enough of that Philly stuff, brother.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. The OJs, one of the most tightest, one of the tightest harmonious three-man groups ever put on the planet.
Stairway to Heaven, not the Led Zeppelin tune.
That's right.
And yeah, there's My Prayer. I've featured a few of them on past shows. Outstanding. I mean, what a great label. I have people like Billy Paul, Harold Melvin, and the Blue Note, all of these great artists, and them to be so good that even the B-sides of their singles are good, you know, just says something for the quality.
Exactly. That's the thing we've been touching on the last couple of shows, David. Actually, even the first show that I happened to have the pleasure of being guested with you, the fact that Philadelphia International, better than any other label, went out of their way to make sure that no matter what piece it was, no matter what project it was, the power of the full apparatus, from everybody from musicians down to arrangers, producers, and whatnot, they did their utmost to create the best possible work that they could. Every song that they made was technically perfect. Mm-hmm. And we hear with B-sides like that just how consistent they were. They never took a day off or note off, if you will, with regards to putting out really quality stuff.
Yeah, there's no question. And as I was saying previously, probably the best label since Motown in the service of the popularization of soul music to the world. You know, just having the great songwriters, the great groups, and studio musicians. It's unfortunate that there isn't more big label organizations, producers around today for the wealth of talent up and coming today.
Oh, for sure, because more than anything, when you hear those lush string arrangements, it tells you that there's a Philly sound or a Philly International coming. That was the signature sound that made Philadelphia the king or the capital of sexy soul. Mm. Those string arrangements really were the foundation. Even though they were beautiful, beautiful voices and great musicians, those strings were the signature sound that made Philadelphia stand out as a soul capital.
And that's part one of 1997, going back to a great show I did with Mike Ingram. I'm David Love Jones, and you're listening to African Rhythms. Of course, we're on CITR, CITR.ca. You can stream and podcast right there. And coming up, second show back, is Rhett Olson and The Basements. So he's going to be bringing you some badass sounds very soon, in about 5 minutes. All right, so before that, I've interestingly got my dubstep, my only dubstep remix I've ever done with Self Evidence, and it's a track he recorded off my show, and then I did a re-edit of it, so I'll play that for you again, and I'll be back next week. So until next time, peace and love. Let the women of the world.
We'll be right back.